Hello, everybody, and welcome to the number one generative AI podcast in the world. So, today, we have a very special episode with Shashank and I. You get us, just the two of us, but we did something kind of interesting this week. So, on Wednesday, it was earlier this week. So, for reference, today is February 10th, 2024. So I think that would have been, what, February 7th?
Mm-hmm.
February 7th. We went to Palo Alto to see the top 500 startups. So there is I guess you wouldn't call it the top 500 startups, but there is the 500 startups investment community. And we saw their pitch day. So we saw
it was more of a practice session.
Oh, okay.
So it was the preview day for the 500 Startups Accelerators Batch 34. So every year, they have a couple batches. I think they have two batches, summer, winter, I think, where they select a bunch of companies to bring into their accelerator or incubator, where they give them mentorship and some seed funding and help them refine their idea, find product market fit, find customers, and most importantly, refine their pitch to find investors on the demo day. So I believe the demo day is next month in March, but this was a preview of that day to help them refine their pitch and demo their products in front of a, you know, more friendly audience of friends and family, other batch members, and investors that are in the 500 community.
Okay, yeah. So we went there and we watched a bunch of pitches, and we wanted to take this podcast episode today to share with you some of the companies that we saw and how it relates to generative AI. So, Shashank, you have a bunch of companies that you're going to explain. So, for reference, I came late, so I missed half the companies. And Shashank is going to introduce them to me, explain it, and we're going to talk about it.
That's right. So, let's start from the beginning. So, I think there were about 30 companies in the batch in total. Unfortunately, not everyone presented, because these are companies that are all over the world. Some of them fly in to come in person here. Some of them can't make it. And out of those, there were a couple that were not based on generative AI. So we have about 10 companies here that we picked that we think make sense to talk about with you guys, the audience. And the first one is an ed tech startup. They're called CoTeach, coteach.io. And we've seen a lot of interest in edtech with generative AI because the promise is you can build a truly customized learning plan for each individual student, as opposed to what we do today, where we give the same lesson plan to everyone and the weakest students are kind of left behind and the strongest students kind of get bored and also in some ways left behind. So this one is able to, I guess their pitch was one-on-one teaching for every student, where they build a learning plan for various subjects, which are aligned with the state and common core curriculum powered by AI. And it's a step-by-step solution with images, voice, and animated text, which is really easy for students to understand. And they're available 24/7, which is like an automated and, you know, the best tutors that you can have, because it's always there whenever the student is ready to learn. Yeah, what do you think, Mark?
So I think that's a really interesting idea to have a separate lesson plan made for each student, as opposed to, like you mentioned, having one where every single student is going to have it today. I do kind of wonder, though, if that idea will take off. I think it's a really interesting idea if you know what you want to learn. But I think that there's oftentimes the issue of not knowing what you don't know, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So like, hypothetically, let's take a subject that I know nothing about, right? Like, I know nothing about deep sea diving, right? Like, I don't know anything about it, right? I know you have to hold your breath, you have to go underwater, but I'm sure there's a lot of things that, like, a lot of nuance that I have nothing about.
You probably don't hold your breath if you're deep sea diving. You have a tank where you're constantly breathing.
You know, there you go, right? So, like, this is the kind of stuff that I don't know about. And, like, I could say, give me, like a course on like diving, but like I might not know like what questions to ask. So I think like when you put the impetus on the like maybe the parent or like the teacher or the learner to ask what they want a course about, like they may not know like what actually exists out there. And they may ask for like shallow things. So I think that like if you know the type of subject matter that you want to learn about, like that might be really great because it could be tailored to you. But for discovering new things, I think that there may be something lacking there. But awesome idea.
Yeah. So I think discovery is definitely a big challenge with AI in general. As I worked with the Google Assistant a while back, and it was always difficult to surface what the assistant was capable of. So on the smart displays, we introduced these little suggestion chips that you can tap on that have common interactions that people might be interested in. So I think these people take a similar approach where they have a bunch of chips that are floating around, math, geometry. I guess they're mostly focused on math, measurements, number system, trigonometry, and you can upload pictures of your homework, ask it to help. You can click on specific areas within maths where it can give you guided courses. And I think they're trying to focus on a specific curriculum for a given state and a specific grade. So it's not as open-ended as what you're thinking of. And I also met another person working on edtech. It was a PM at another startup who came to our meetup. And she mentioned that the biggest challenge is trying to get these products into the school system. That's the entity that you're selling to. And whether or not the student or the parent enjoys this tool, there are even a lot of teachers who love this tool because it makes it their job simpler. But it's getting the school system to adopt these tools and pay for it and incorporate it into their routine, which is a challenge.
See, yeah, it does seem like that is interesting, but it really could potentially help a lot of students get a course that is tailored to them. So maybe the way I could think about it, if maybe they want you to think about it this way, is like it's kind of like a private tutor where you kind of know like the general subject matter that you want, but it can tailor the lesson plan for a individual student. Because I think, you know, one problem is as you mentioned, if a teacher has to teach for, let's say, 30 students at a time, like you can't tailor the course for a single student. Like you have to do it for the average student or the lowest common denominator student or whatever it is. But this could be like one teacher per student. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the actual parent, or not parent, but a teacher-child ratio might matter less. Mm-hmm. Because if you could have
larger
class sizes. Yeah, huge class sizes. Like you could have one teacher or like one monitor in the future, one person just kind of, you know, watching the students, make sure they don't hurt themselves. And you could just have like a room of 1,000 kids all with this individual AI tutor learning them or helping them learn.
That's a bit of a scary image, but I guess it would help us scale education to more people.
It would, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a little bit Brave New World-esque. But that could be a future.
Maybe in this current present, I think it would still help families get access to tutoring services at a much lower cost.
That's true.
I'm all for bringing more accessible education to the masses. So another one that we saw is kind of slightly related. It is emotional and social educational learning. So this company is called Nookly, Nookly.com. And it allows you to, I guess it allows you to enter a free form prompt, but their pitch was to give you social skills and build EQ, which is not focused on as much in today's education systems.
I feel like it's not really focused on much at all. I mean, nowadays, or at least when I was in school, I think there was some of that, right? But I think it was more about like, you know, what you knew and not like your emotional intelligence.
Did you guys not have So I went to school, well, in the Middle East, but it was the Indian education system. It's called the CBSE, Central Board of Secondary Education. So that was the final exam that we all took in the 10th and then again in the 12th grade. But we had this class, moral science fluff course, where I didn't really learn much, but I think its purpose was to give social empathy and emotional understanding, awareness, and teach you to be a good human being. So it's like, you know, find a wallet on the floor with a bunch of money. What do you do?
Spend it.
No, I'm just kidding. Did you guys not have any classes like that in here in the US?
You know, so we did. I actually went to like a religious school, like a Catholic school. So they had a theology course, mm-hmm. and like a religious course where they talk about all kinds of things. But I don't know if like public school like here would have that. Maybe they do. I'm not sure.
Okay.
So that's a good question. But I don't know. I feel like some of that is best done by the parents, mm-hmm. potentially, right? Like not necessarily in school mm-hmm. is the thing that should teach you, but that should be like parents teaching good moral values mm-hmm. to people, and also just like social norms, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, it's not good social norms to I don't know, like change your clothes in the middle of the classroom. That would be
frowned upon.
That would be frowned upon, right? And I think if you started doing that, people would probably tell you to stop.
Yeah, I think the search discovery is another important conversation here. It's like they have an open-ended search box. And I think if you give a couple suggested topics to learn about, that would be kind of helpful. But I tried out their product real quick, and it gives you pictures and text and plays out this story to help you learn a specific skill. So I put in a hypothetical skill for a five-year-old kid. To make it whimsical, you were able to pick the ethnicity, set the kid's name, gender, and the length of the story. And so I said, so I have this kid, and she has trouble sharing toys with her brother. How do you solve that? So I built out this hypothetical story where there's a unicorn that comes in. These are pictures that look kind of like Pixar cartoons. And unicorn says you can only get this special prize if you work together with someone to solve this puzzle. He works with her brother, and you know, they face some challenges. They finally solve it, and then voila, they're transported into this magical land with a bunch of magical creatures. So it was really cute. I think it's pretty easy to give this to a little kid, as you said. Well, this is the parents' job. Yes, I think ideally, but kids today are also addicted to their phones, and it's hard for them to, or hard for parents to compete with a screen that has all the world's information.
That's true. It's hard for anybody to compete with that.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. The next one was yellowpad.ai. So this was started by another Googler. And it's funny because we worked on the same projects. So he, this is a legal startup that automates legal workflows with AI.
Did you work with him?
No, I didn't. So I'm an engineer. And he was a lawyer for a long time, but I think at Google, he worked on BizDev. So he worked on Stadia and the Google Home.
Oh, nice.
So I worked on both of those products in addition to a bunch of Google Home and Nest products. And it was funny. He left right before Stadia launched. I think it was a couple years ago.
By the way, how long was Stadia released for? Was that like 2 months or something like that? And they killed it? It was like, oh yeah, we're going to support this forever. And then after like, you know, a year, they're like, all right, bye-bye.
I don't know if they made any promises of how long they'll support this for, but yeah, it didn't last too long.
Wow.
I don't think it aligned with their core business competency.
Oh, okay.
They were focused on building platforms and infrastructure to empower other developers.
I see.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. But yeah, these guys, yellowpad.ai, I'm excited about legal automation because it seems like most of what you pay a lawyer for can be automated. Like some of these lawyers charge $1,000 an hour And what are they doing? They're spending their time emailing you and responding to phone calls. I would love for them to be able to use these automated tools for grunt work or things that they don't need to think too hard about.
So maybe they could bill you less hours, potentially. Because, I mean, yeah. I feel like with the lawyers, you're not just charging. They're not charging you just to, you know, answer a phone call or respond to email. It's not, you're not paying them as a typist. You care about
I don't want to, but I think I am.
But, like, you're paying them for what they said.
Yep.
Making sure that what they said is like legal and the advice is good. So, I think that something like this is a really cool idea. If it can help the lawyer, maybe bill you less hours in aggregate, right? So like if they have some templates that they're working off of, I think that's, fantastic. As long as they can avoid saying anything that is incorrect. Because I know that a lot of these models have hallucinations.
Yeah.
And I'd be worried. And because like, I think a lot of the nuances for each of the words really, really matter. Whatever you say, like every single tiny detail may be scrutinized in a contract. So, well, I think it's like a good idea. I would be a little bit worried about hallucinations and saying something that's like slightly off that isn't going to be giving me the best deal that maybe like a lawyer that would have written by hand might have given for a contract or something.
Yeah. There was that highly publicized case where a lawyer used the output from ChatGPT verbatim and presented it in court, and I think he got disbarred because ChatGPT hallucinated a couple of things that didn't exist in that case. So we definitely, I think lawyers definitely don't want that to happen. But we've also, as part of our meetup event, we host once a month at Procopio Law Offices. And Roger there, he's one of the lawyers there. He mentioned some of his concerns over giving a tool like this to a junior attorney, paralegal, someone, and them not being able to vet the output of these products and just going with whatever it gives them. So he's a little worried about that.
You know, that's a really good point because, as I mentioned before, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And if it sounds coherent and good, you might be like, yeah, sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And I do think, setting that aside, there's a lot of parts of a lawyer's workflow that seems very tedious. It seems like collecting documents, summarizing what exists, and hopefully this can help automate some of that.
Yeah, I think that's, if it works well, and I assume that if they're making a company out of it, they must have vetted these things.
Yeah, and the founder has been a lawyer for many years.
So it is exciting. I hope that they've been able to solve a lot of those problems with the hallucinations,
yeah,
and that it works, and then lawyers can feel like they trust it. And then maybe lawyers will only be needed for highly complex cases and less of the grunt work. So maybe like if I want something like, I don't know, like a will or like a company formation, something like that that's like fairly standard, they might just be able to do that, or even like use an automated tool for that going forward, and then like you might not even need a lawyer, or maybe you just have like a lawyer just like, you know, check it over, and give like the final plus one, like, okay, this is legit, and maybe that's only need like, you know, an hour of their time as opposed to like 8 hours or, you know, 40 hours drafting up documents from scratch.
Yeah, there's definitely a hot space for generative AI to be used. Another popular one that comes to mind is Case Text. I think they've been around for a while.
Okay, I haven't heard of them. What do they do? Is it the same thing?
Legal services. I think it simplifies the lawyer's workflow.
Yeah, I remember. I think that there was something where they could negotiate traffic tickets or something on your behalf. Remember the name of that, but I do remember seeing something along those lines where you got like a
parking ticket or something. Mm-hmm. They could help negotiate that and get the price down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess those are kind of two ways you can go with generative AI and law. You can focus on one specific kind of legal issue, parking tickets, and then just have a bot fill out the documents for that specific use case. Or you can build a tool that is more universal that all lawyers can use. So I'm just looking at Case Text. Apparently it's part of Thomson Reuters. I guess they bought it. So it's basically a RAG from what the demo looks on their website, where you throw in a bunch of documents and then you can ask legal questions on those documents.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Another one that is kind of related, which I really, thought was really exciting, is Immigram.io. It's an immigration help service which automatically fills out immigration documents.
Oh man, that's fantastic.
Oh my god, you have no idea.
I do have an idea.
You do?
Yeah. So my wife, she's Japanese. And when we were applying for a green card, we had to fill out a bunch of documents. And when I say we, I mean me, filled out a bunch of documents for her on USCIS to come here. And like, it was fine. But I had to spend a lot of time and effort filling out like all the documents. You have to like prove that you guys are like actually married. You have to like show pictures of the relationship, and you have to show your cold work history, all the countries you've been to, all the addresses you've ever lived at. They want to know everything. And while it was approved, there was a lot of tedious effort that would have been really nice that could have been automated slightly by the AI. And then the same thing happened. Well, I didn't fill it out, but my wife, she filled it out when I was living in Japan. Mm-hmm. Every time we wanted to get like a visa for that, we had to, fill out all that stuff, and all that's in Japanese. So I couldn't have done it. So I needed her help to do it. So like, I'm familiar with like some of this immigration stuff, and it is not fun. So anything there that can be automated is a huge win in my book, especially if it, is going to work, right? Like, because I think I talked to the one co-founder of Immigrant, and she said that it was like 90-something% of their applications are approved. I don't remember the exact percentage, but I remember it was like quite high. So if that continues to be true, then that's fantastic.
Yeah. Like what you said was the same thing that I experienced. But on top of that, on top of the tedium, the bureaucracy, you also have the added emotional stress. Because as an outsider, there's a lot at stake. And I think these big decisions that impact your entire life, whether it's immigration, finance, legal issues, you're like very emotionally crippled by these forms. So I think it was great that you were there to help out Aya when she was immigrating here, and she was there to help you both with like the context of Japanese immigration intricacies and the language. I think that's really nice. But unfortunately, not everyone has someone else to help them out. And a tool like this is fantastic. So it seems like they've started off in Europe, where there's a ton of immigration, lots of different countries, lots of migration across borders.
Europe sounds hard. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I imagine.
I think America is pretty hard too.
Well, yeah.
I think the combination of countries that you can immigrate to and from in Europe may be much more complicated, but the process is, I think, one of the hardest here in America. I love what they're doing. Anything to make immigration simpler is a win in my books.
Yeah, totally agree. So, Shashank, what's next?
Next, we have something kind of adjacent, is bookkeeping tax filing for startups. It's called APLA, aplahub.com, APLAHUB.com. So the pitch that they made was, everyone tries to pay for QuickBooks, but no one actually uses it. They just hand it off to their tax accountant and said, okay, here, try to make sense of this for me. And, you know, I may agree with them if I had my own business and was doing my own itemized deductions and trying to fill out. Yeah, that seems really tedious and really daunting. And also, what you don't know, you don't know. And there's a lot of that when trying to deal with this stuff. So they make it simpler to file taxes, do bookkeeping as a startup, where they hook up with QuickBooks, hook into QuickBooks, Gusto, and Slack, I guess, where you're able to chat with their AI assistant and simplify this process.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting because I know that accountants can do a lot of grunt work where they're doing things like categorizing expenses and I don't know, like just transposing data from various different receipt types onto different bookkeeping ledgers or whatever. And if that can be automated, I don't know if it'll be completely automated just because I'm sure that they'll want somebody to maybe double check the work. But there's a big difference between double checking what the AI has done and actually having to manually type in the data. So it might be able to take, you know, maybe somebody who is spending 40 hours a week on it, they might be able to spend like maybe 4 hours a week on doing that, which is a huge win. So maybe that means that there's less accountants hired, but I think that a lot of the accountants might be overworked anyways. So they probably use all the help they can get.
Yeah. Do you think accountants themselves will start using these tools and charging less for the same routine tasks?
Maybe. So I think that there's different types of things that accountants could potentially do, right? So like my understanding is that, you know, a CPA, they might do something where they do something where you are, but it's like helping people optimize tax, and that I think might be less routine, right? But if you are doing something where you are maybe creating a profit and loss statement for a company or preparing a financial statement, some of that may be more routine type work because it's mostly just like categorizing expenses and lumping that together and trying to figure out, it's like, you know, it's like money coming in or money going out, right? So that might be more automated. But I think that, like, you know, every single year, like different countries, they change their tax laws. Mm-hmm. So based off of the different tax laws and accounting treatments that you need to do, you need to update your systems every year. So I think because of that, like, accountants are going to stay busy for a while. But like a lot of the stuff that like was manual, maybe a lot of that will be fully automated. And then, you know, maybe in the future, like if everything is on some sort of blockchain, then maybe like the you need just like one programmer to update all the accounting rules to take out the taxes immediately off of, you know, FedNow or whatever they use, like some central bank digital currency. But until we get to that point, I think accountants are going to still have a job, and this will probably just help accelerate what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess going back to the analogy of the legal firms that we were looking at, so you can either build products that solve a specific problem for the customer themselves, or build tools for the lawyer or tax accountant and simplify their workflow. I'm curious to see if there's any products that cater to tax accountants. What about Aya? Does she use any AI tools?
Yeah, so Aya is my wife. She is a CPA, so I know some of this stuff, or I don't know it, but she talks about it. So I think she uses some tools that aren't necessarily generative AI. I know she told me that she uses like Bill.com, which I think has some
good domain.
It is great domain, yeah. It uses, and I think she also uses like 1099.com or something like that. So anyway, some of these different tools. And I think, I don't actually know like all the things that she uses tools for, but I think like Bill.com has some things that you can like maybe extracts some data from receipts and like maybe some automated bucketing. I'm not sure. I've never used it, but I think she does use some of those tools, but I think, you know, there's always things that you might be able to use. You know, there's always room for improvement. So I don't know.
I mean, I would imagine these companies, if they're not already using AI, are thinking about how to use AI in their workflows.
Yeah.
All right. Next one is ChatSimple, chatsimple.ai. It is a chatbot for sales and support. 24/7 lead generation, qualification, conversion, engage and understand the needs of your visitor, and then powered by ChatGPT in multiple languages. So their UI is very similar to Intercom, where there's a little chat bubble on the corner of the website. Pops up and you can start asking the chat about the website. The person that I spoke to is founder, one of the founders. He's also a former Googler. He worked on some of the assistants dialogue flow back in the day before it was LLM powered.
Who is not from Google?
You know, it's a big company, and Silicon Valley is a small world.
That's true.
And yeah, there's a lot of cross-pollination between the startup world and big tech companies. So he worked on some of these early generation of chatbots. Manually have to create these conversational flows. And I did that at my early startup many, many years ago. It's very tedious, very cumbersome, but obviously AI makes things a lot simpler, LLM in particular. And so his pitch was, if you think about a very complicated enterprise software product or company specifically, they have tons and tons of products, features with highly nested dropdowns with different tools that do all sorts of things. But you as a customer, you go in with a specific problem in mind that you're trying to solve for your company, product, idea, whatever. And it's kind of overwhelming. I mean, look at AWS's website. Oh my God. To try to figure out how to host a website, how to deploy a service, how to use a database, there are so, so many options. And if you're an individual, a startup, I think it's very overwhelming. So this aims to make that process simpler by guiding the users, trying to focus on solving their specific need.
So how does that work? Would it be like, if I'm a company, I would maybe show my documentation or maybe some chat history, or maybe even explain like the details of my product and or service. And then this would be like a helpful assistant to help you use or better understand a given product. So maybe like it would help automate some of the customer support and sales roles. Is that like the way to think about this?
I guess the onboarding flow specifically. So they have a demo on their website. It says, all it takes is 5 minutes to create the perfect AI chatbot for your business. And there's a video of it where you input a bunch of links and customize, you know, the chat window according to your brand, add a logo, set a color scheme. And once it has scraped all of the links for your website, it can just ingest all that data. I assume on the back end, it kind of builds a RAG where it has a knowledge base of all of your company's data, and then you can ask it questions.
Okay. I mean, that's pretty cool. So maybe it could help with selling your product.
Mm-hmm.
So people might have questions about it. They might not know what to do, why to buy, and this could help you, as opposed to have paying somebody to answer those questions manually.
Mm-hmm.
Or like having a detailed FAQ, like people just ask, tell me what this product does. I need help.
Yeah, it's a cool idea. Yeah, they've added some more features where you can surface certain actions that you want customers to take. Talked about discoverability with these AI chatbots being difficult. So you can have like a buy button or browse button for a specific feature. Make it easier for users to discover that. All right. Next is Vidoc Security. VIDOC security.com.
VIDOC. VIDOC? Maybe VIDDoc.
VIDDoc? I don't think it has anything to do with video. I'm not sure what that
means. Okay.
I met one of the folks working on it. I think he might be the founder. This really sweet Polish guy who, I saw his blog post on LinkedIn. He said he moved from Poland, left his family, his cat behind, and was here with his girlfriend. Very supportive. And he is like, I took a big leap of faith, moved out here halfway across the world. I don't have any FANG degree, not from any of the Ivy League schools, but, I'm trying.
Poland is a wonderful place. It'd be hard to leave there.
But one thing he had going for him is this is a cybersecurity or AI security engineer that automates automates threat detection, finds vulnerabilities, security holes in your code base. And the way they landed on this idea was they'd been collecting bounties for white hacking challenges from various companies, Microsoft. That's the one that I remember, but I think a couple other companies too, Meta. So where they discovered vulnerabilities, got a bunch of prizes, and then they realized, hey, maybe we can automate this process. Build a tool that finds vulnerabilities in your code base and helps you protect against them. He showed me the tool. It was really well built. It has a bunch of different modules that apparently people from the community have created that can find various security issues. They're targeting web applications right now, as he mentioned that mobile apps have slightly different workflow for detecting security holes, and that's a crowded space already.
Yeah, because I know that a lot of, well, it depending on the type of application, like I think like your threat model is different. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you're building, let's say an Android application, there are, I think, less security vulnerabilities to worry about compared to if you're building a web server. Because, if you're an Android app, you're running locally on the device. Only one user is using it at a time. In general, you don't have to worry about like a whole lot of things. The only thing you have to really worry about is like maybe other apps and then user input, right?
But don't have to worry about other apps. It's like a siloed environment.
Well, if you're doing some sort of inter-process communication between the applications, you might need to hypothetically worry about the app if you are, allowing input from another app. But that's like kind of a niche use case. But like if you have a web server, then you're getting potentially user input from maybe millions or billions of users all at a time. So,
well, if you're getting billions of users, you probably build out your own thing.
Well, I mean, that's a good problem to have, right? But, you have a lot of hits, right? And if you have, like, a web server, like, there's a lot of people trying to attack you all at once. So if you can automate some of that security testing or even just, like, check for best practices, I think that's great. It could help just make the world more secure.
Yeah, I mean, what you don't know, you don't know. So I think
that's right.
This definitely gives you some peace of mind if you can run it on your website and then have it spit out some recommendations or threats that it finds, design practices that it suggests. That would make me feel a lot better about it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm sure it's not, maybe as good as having like a professional security firm do a full penetration test on your website, but this sounds like a really good alternative, and it could just make sure that you are able to get all the low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I think they're using ChatGPT behind the scenes. I forget exactly how they work. One of the examples has you enter your website's list of domains, and it'll like try to crawl that domain, call all the different actions on that website, If you have authentication, you can pass in some credentials. But I think they also have some kind of an IDE plugin that runs through your code base, is able to understand the code itself and the security implications of that code. That seems pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
They have a free trial. You want to check it out.
Nice.
All right.
So what's next?
Yeah. The next one is diffusedrive.com. So I guess this one is technically Gen AI, but they focus on generating high fidelity synthetic data for the vision AI use case.
Very niche.
Yeah, I mean, very niche, but autonomous driving was a big craze a few years ago. And I think a lot of companies did try to use synthetic data to create environments and like game engines. So the self-driving car or like the model could understand how to deal with certain novel situations and just get a lot of training video data. So I think this was in, I don't know what you would call it, like the previous wave of vision-based AI models. But I guess there's a lot of need for these kinds of companies even now, because it's not just self-driving cars, but drones. Now you have robotics, Roomba vacuums, maybe like more humanoid robots come into the market.
So is the idea that this company would just make a really deep, like a realistic simulation of the world?
I'm not exactly sure how to do it, but they claim to do 100x more data, only relevant visual data when you need it at no additional cost.
Huh.
They have pictures of real-world use cases, aerial shots, ground-level street view shots, things that have like fine segmented outlines around the trees, cars, the lanes, etc. Seems like they give you very high fidelity training data for vision models.
Okay. Okay. So I bet these guys could make really great video games. If the whole self-driving car thing doesn't work out, they could probably have like awesome open worlds that you could explore.
I don't know if these people make synthetic data from video games. They might be using diffusion models to create these.
Yeah, but they could use that to create video games, right? Not necessarily from video games, but just imagine that you had how cool would it be if you had a hyper-realistic world where, like, think like Grand Theft Auto, but like hyper realistic, so realistic that you can use it for simulated like self-driving cars.
I also don't know if they make video data. All I see is static images.
Well,
I think video is a big challenge.
You just need like 60 images per second and then you got video.
All right. Next one on the topic of creating images is puppetry.com. Puppetry is the easiest way to tell stories with faces. It's the tagline on their website, and they have an app on the App Store. They have close to 1 million images generated, over 50,000 video makers, over 160,000 videos generated. So it looks like a DID, if you've ever seen that tool.
No, what is that?
Where you give it a picture of a person, and it can animate that. Have it say a sentence, have it animate the mouth and lip movements to be in sync with what it's saying.
Is that used for making deepfakes?
It can be, yeah.
Like, did you hear about that story where, I think it was like the last week or two, somebody went on like a conference call with their CFO and all of like the people in finance, and they're like,
it's in Hong Kong, right? They got away with the $25 million.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, we need the money for, I don't know, something. And then like the guy wired $25 million.
They deepfaked the entire company's exec or C-suite level team.
Yeah.
And then like this guy believed that the CFO or CEO, they were all asking him to wire $25 million.
Like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll sign right off on it. That's horrible.
I guess like for that, you're going to, you know, that's just gives a better reason for why we need like good, strong public key cryptography. Right. And just whoever you're talking to, you're going to have to like validate it with your private key. And I mean, that would solve that problem.
Honestly, I was thinking about that. Build a tool where you guys can have an app, an authenticator app, where you click verify at the same time. And you're able to authenticate that the person you're talking to is the person that you want to talk to.
You know, I think that's really important.
You want to build something like that?
We can. Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be fun. That sounds like a fun, like, weekend project.
Yeah, but the puppetry isn't as high fidelity. I think they were focusing on entirely AI-generated stylistic images. Actually, they do have some realistic images on there, in addition to cats and wolves and stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, I think their use case is to tell stories.
Okay.
With faces. Classrooms and social media. Create content that's more engaging. Short-form content. All right. This is the last AI, generative AI startup that I saw at the 500 Startups Demo Day. Reverie. TravelReverie.com. All of your TikTok mapped for you. So their pitch was, most Gen Z folks see or get travel recommendations not from Expedia or any of the old school travel blogs. They get it on TikTok, Instagram, short form video, images, and they're trying to categorize and scrape travel recommendations from social media. And Gen AI part comes into play when they create these little cards with specific places and scrape the reviews and give a short recommendation snippet about why this is relevant for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think something like that is pretty cool. I think that it would be something that I would consider using if I was trying to find an itinerary of different places that I wanted to go to. So let's imagine I was going to go visit, say, Chicago. And if I wanted to visit Chicago, you know, I have like a rough idea. I might want to see that. What is that thing called? The Bean? Like, and maybe I want to see Navy Pier and
Sears Tower.
Yeah, it's the Willis Tower now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I should know this.
So anyways, you know, all these things, maybe look at the Great Lake, Michigan. I think it's Michigan, right?
Yeah, you remember it.
Yeah. Anyways, all of these wonderful things in Chicago. Yeah, eat a hot dog, eat just pizza, all the good stuff.
Yeah, I guess you can just look up the best things to do in Chicago and probably find this. But so I'm going through their flow right now. And what is slightly different about them is you can specify what kind of activities you're interested in, like food, nightlife, museum, shopping. And then you say what aspects of the experience is most important to you. Off the beaten path, you want something aesthetic and Instagrammable or culturally authentic or for younger travelers. Then it takes all these preferences and then gives you a suggestion. I'm looking at recommendations for Kyoto, and has the have you ever been there?
I've been to Kyoto, yeah.
So it suggests the Nishiki Market, Otagi, Nenbutsuji Temple, World Kyoto Club, Kimchi, Kichikichi,
Market, Otagi, Nenbutsuji Temple, World Kyoto Club, Kichikichi Omurice.
And so we select English three studios. Of those and hit continue.
Yeah, I don't think I actually did any of this stuff. I lived in Tokyo,
okay.
But I've only been to Kyoto once.
Okay. Any of these stand out to you?
No. Actually, I think I saw the Bamboo Grove when I was there.
Well, if you'd used this tool, maybe you could have found out about these hidden gems.
You know, they're not so hidden gems. If, everybody can find it.
Everybody on TikTok. Maybe you're not on TikTok much.
Actually, I don't have a TikTok account.
Yeah,
I should get one.
Yeah, that's the last one we have today.
Okay, cool. Well then, yeah. Thanks, everybody. Until next time.